Tap into the passion and vision of well-known entertainment luminaries with Thinking Out Loud. Go on a journey with unfiltered access to today's media innovators. Hear their strategy for rising above the crowded landscape. Important lessons and valuable wisdom that only comes from real industry experience.
Hello, I'm Vicki Linz, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization focused on the media entertainment technology industry. And today I'm speaking with Laurent Devilliers, CEO of a new streaming service, Stroom. Welcome, Laurent.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here.
Well, I'm really excited about today's conversation. This is a space that is really interesting to me, and I know to a lot of our listeners as well. So I can't wait to dive in. But before we do that, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background so we get a sense of your experience and insight and the perspective you're bringing to this new business?
Absolutely. So I came to this venture by way of Microsoft, Yahoo, Disney, and Discovery. So I really originally worked on a TV show while I was in Seattle. And then when we were on hiatus, I started doing freelance work at Microsoft, and I ended up working at Microsoft, working on the original IP TV business there, right? So we were building content and experiences for interactive television consumption, which at the time, which was many years ago, you know, it was very difficult to distribute the content because we were working with such sort of small pipes, you know, 56K modems and such. So I was really at the forefront of that IPTV space that's really evolved to where we are today. From there, I went to Yahoo to oversee distribution deals because Yahoo at the time, it was 2007, 2008, had such an enormous platform, and we were really trying to get content on those platforms to distribute out to customers. And so Disney was definitely in my sight line of a premium content provider that I wanted to do a deal with. And from Yahoo, I was recruited to Disney to oversee the digital strategy team for the Three Kids Network. So Disney Channel, Disney XD, and Disney Junior. And there, we were building a lot of direct-to-consumer businesses, including the TV Everywhere business, which is still around, but now people are primarily focused on SVOD businesses. But that was really the first foray into getting direct to consumer through cable subscriptions, streaming platforms. And then I also had the opportunity to work on a lot of interactive TV development products that we were pushing out on iOS and Android. After Disney, I went over to Discovery to build and launch an SVOD platform for international distribution, which was great. And then they moved that business into the international market. So I pivoted back to Disney and was working on the launch plans for Disney Plus. So it was so fantastic to kind of have a seat at the table with Disney Plus to see how they were going to go out into market. So for me, this intersection of media and content and technology has always been in my DNA. And so that's really what I bring to what we are doing at Stroom.
That is a really broad and interesting background. And notable along the way, you picked up some relationships with colleagues who have ended up being your co-founders in Stroom. Am I correct about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, with the four of us, I would say we have really a well-rounded experience in this space. So Paul Pastor was a former SVP at Disney ABC Television Group. So I've known him for many, many years. We both worked for Ann Sweeney. I worked for Albert Chang. So we were very closely related on the business. And then we reconnected when he went over to Discovery to work with Rich Ross as primarily as COO there. So he is a co-founder and the chief business officer at Stroom. Eugene Liu, I connected with while we were working on Disney Plus. We would often go to lunch and we would just talk about the market and what's happening. We workshopped this idea. And so we spent a lot of time together. We started talking about this in December of 2019 into the beginning of 2020, when we really put it together and started pitching. And then Thomas Wadsworth, Eugene brought him into the team, was a head of product and design for Disney Life, and also had an important role at Imagineering at Disney. So between the co-founders, as well as our advisory board, there is a lot of sort of Disney and Discovery blood there. As I mentioned, you know, the most important thing I would say as the four founders is that we just have an ability to kind of see all sides of the business, given our expertise that we each bring to the table.
Well, while we're talking about the team and the founders, it's also interesting to note that you've received funding from Michael Eisner's company.
Yes.
So yeah. this Disney connection is is really kind of deep in the veins of Stroom, which is an interesting part of the background story.
You know, when we pitched Michael and Andy Redman at Tornante, I mean, just stepping back a little bit to talk a little bit about our pitch process and what happened with the pandemic, you know, we built our pitch deck in February, March of 2020 and started pitching in April. What it afforded us was that everybody had open calendars and we weren't having to sort of drive and fly everywhere. You know, we were able to pitch, you know, 5, 6, 7 times a day. And when we pitched Tornante, it was instant. They instantly got it. They understood the business. They understood the opportunity, the seismic opportunity beyond of what we were launching with and what the greater vision was for us. And they came on board very quickly. And Michael and Andy have both really leaned into the relationship. You know, we often talk about our investors as it's not just about the money, but it really is the value of the relationship and the partnership. And, you know, we were courting other investors and it just made perfect sense for us to work with Tornante as our lead investor in our seed round because of the value and the insight that Michael brought to the table.
That's really exciting. And you said they immediately got it. So now let's help all of our listeners to immediately get it too. Tell us, what is Stroom? What makes Stroom different? Why are you excited about this venture?
So Stroom, in a nutshell, is an aggregated service that allows consumers to seamlessly discover and consume content from multiple SVOD providers via a credit-based exchange system. In looking at the research, what we see is that consumers really kind of skim across the top of a lot of services and they dive in and dive out and they tend to join services utilizing the free trial to binge on content. What our hypothesis is that we charge a monthly subscription fee, which is $4.99 per month right now, and you get 100 credits per month that also roll over. So there is this one subscription, one credit card, and you get access to over 60 different services of library that you can use your credits to go watch the things that you want to watch. And the credit-based pricing model is we allow you to manage all of the content that you want using those credits. What we see is that within the consumer space, there is a lot of content out there. And so what we are saying is that, yes, there is Netflix, and yes, there is Hulu, and there is Amazon, and there is Disney Plus. And then there is this sea of opportunity of content that is in the aspirational tier one and the medium to long tail of content providers that I really feel like don't get the same sort of shelf space that the big players in the market do. And so what Stroom is really providing is a shelf for consumers to come in and see all of this incredible content and to be able to watch this content without ever actually leaving the platform. So we're a little different versus other referral services that they'll essentially tell you where you can watch something and then you have to go and subscribe to that service. What we provide is we are ingesting all of the content onto our platform so a consumer can come in and they can access all of this content without ever leaving the Stroom platform. So they can search and discover content. And the value really is the access to all of these different services within one payment model.
What are the differences between Amazon Prime Video channels and Stream? Because that's also an access point and a menu opportunity within a membership opportunity. So what are the differences there?
The differences are we have ingested all of these services onto our platform. So a consumer never has to actually leave the experience to go subscribe to another service. With Amazon, you still have to subscribe, right? So if you want a subscription to BritBox or you want a subscription to the BBC, at the end of the day, while Amazon will manage that for you, you still have that individual subscription to manage. What we are saying is we will manage that one subscription for you and allow you the access to all of these libraries of content. And then the layered piece on top of that, Vicky, is that we will be able to see how you are consuming content across our platform. And let's say you are using a lot of your credits watching BBC. We will say, Vicky, we see you are using all of your credits on BBC. You might be better served to have a subscription to BBC. And so we will then unlock that channel or that service for you for whatever the subscription price that BBC wants to set it at. And now you can get all you can eat of the BBC still within our environment, and you can use your credits to search and discover and access new content that we are constantly onboarding onto the platform.
Would that BBC subscription then be through Stream? So my relationship and entry point would stay aggregated through Stream.
It would.
You're very focused on removing a lot of friction for the consumer.
Part of the fatigue and the friction that people are experiencing is just that. As a consumer myself, I come in and I'm like, oh, I really want to watch that series, but I'll sign up for the free trial and then I'll try and binge it. Or I will, you know, which I did with my daughter, wanted to watch, the final season of a show, and I got the service. And then 7 months later, I realized I'd paid $70 for my daughter to watch 13 episodes. So we are removing that frustration. And then the fatigue is really finding what you want across all of these platforms. Again, what we see in research is that while over 30% of people are searching for entertainment-based content, they are also looking for interest-based content. And we really fit squarely in that.
Do you have plans to take Stream international at some point?
We are working on our international plans as we speak. One of our lead investors in our Series A is an international company. Now, one of the things that in talking with content partners for some of the smaller players is the challenge that they have around financing, localizing the language or localizing the currency, it is prohibitive for them to take their services international. And so one of the strategies for Stream, not only to take the platform international, but to provide a place for these content providers to reach international audiences. And I would say similarly for international content partners that we are talking to, that we would bring their content into the US. So we absolutely have huge plans to push the business internationally, and we have to.
I'm going to shift gears into the content side a little bit. You said you're going to have 60, I believe, in the next month or so. I certainly don't expect you to name them all, but give us a sampling of some of the partners that are available. And then I want to talk to you about what draws consumers to that content, because you've mentioned that a couple of times now.
So we just launched BBC on our platform. I mean, right now we have the BBC on there. We have ConTV, Docurama, Deku, which is an LGBTQ service, Echo Boom Sports. We have a Korean series, Kakao, which is actually doing really well for us. And then we also have partners that are testing the model, right? So they're testing the SVOD model. They might be AVOD based, but like say a Tastemade is on our platform and they are experimenting with an SVOD model. We've Tribeca, we have Young Hollywood, and then we are going to be onboarding some international services like France Channels. I mean, I could go on, okay. But that's where we're at.
So this is where I'm curious. Right now with this proliferation of content, it seems like the ecosystem has shifted towards big brands. Whether or not it's a big brand like Netflix, where people feel they can find something about anything that they may want to watch, or big brands like the libraries of Marvel, you know, Star Wars universe and all that. People are gravitating to those types of big content names, feeling more confident in their ability to find things that they're going to want to watch and therefore are willing to pay for. How do you go about drawing consumers to a place where it's more of a seek and find experience, where they may be delighted by where they land, but they don't know really where they're going when they enter?
I would argue that, yes, I think that the big brands take up a lot of shelf space. In the most recent report that Antenna put out, they said that the annual growth rate of the specialty kind of niche services in the past 2 years has grown almost 75% compared to larger players who have grown about 30% year over year. And so I would say that a consumer is actually seeking out more of this interest-based content and they're looking for specialty content, right? And so we really see that consumption watching is a habit, right? I mean, this is exactly what happens in my household. You sit down and you open up Netflix and you're looking for something in Netflix, and then you might go to Disney Plus if you have kids. You may go to HBO Max. And what we're saying is we sit alongside that. We are that next choice. We are the ones that you've looked through all of that and you are looking for a great documentary, or you are looking for everything you can know about how to make pasta or something in that realm. And then we are serving the need and elevating the space for a lot of these content partners in that medium to long tail space. We have a pretty robust mixed media model right now with marketing and search. And we are really looking at people who are seeking out those interest-based content pieces, right? The people that are really focused on documentaries, are really focused on lifestyle events, are really focused on music.
And it sounds to me like your content offerings are across demographics, that you're really not aimed at older, younger, male, female. There's literally something for everyone.
Well, yes. You know, as we were looking at the content partnerships that we wanted to do, we wanted to make sure that we covered off across many different genres and audience targets and audience segments. I would say, though, that the rich data that we have, not only as we are sort of pulling people in at the top of the funnel, but what we're seeing in who and how our platform is being used. So while right now, yes, there's sort of something for everyone, we're very focused on how we're going to hone that into a really sort of smart targeting of a consumer.
You've been live now for how long?
We launched at the end of May. We called it a preview. We launched on iOS and web and also Chromecast and AirPlay. We went out on these platforms to really take the time to onboard over 40,000 pieces of content. So what we decided to do was go out into the market with a preview of the product, spend a minimal amount of marketing to really hone who our audience is, what are the interests that we're going to go after, how are we going to target them, the creative, the messaging, all of this was really around A/B testing the models to get us ready as we are pushing onto other platforms in the next couple of months.
So it's very early to ask this question, but I'll take a shot at it anyway. In the first few months, what have you seen? What's really resonating? Where are you gaining traction? And are you surprised by any of that? Or is this sort of taking root the way you expected it to?
It's funny that you ask that. It is very early days, right? So we are about 90 days in. What is surprising to me is we really were targeting primarily female head of household. And what we're seeing is our traction is really coming in at men who are 35 and above. And then we have this pocket of young millennials that are coming in. So we look at the deep research around these pockets that millennials really seek out that documentary, that nonfiction, crime, that type of content really resonates. Going into it, I was like, okay, we're going to target sort of female head of household and go after those interests based on what female head of households are interested in. And what I found is that that's not what is being picked up on the platform. So that's been really interesting to us. I would say what is being consumed is pretty on par with what we see in our segmentation. Documentaries are huge. True crime is really big. People are really seeking out comedy and drama. The international content that we're onboarding is also getting a nice lift.
So we've talked a little bit about the consumer value. Let's shift and talk about your partner value and your financial model and how the business actually works. So what is the benefit for partners to do business with Strum, and how does this all come together?
Yeah, so we've been on both sides of the table. So as a Disney executive or Discovery executive, the brand is so important to us. And so when we were proposing these content, we met with so many content partners, and they really actually helped us shape and form some of our thinking, which evolved the business quickly. But one of the things that we promised is that their brands would be front and center on every single asset within the platform. And so when you look at the platform and you see the content, you will always know what brand is associated with that. And that is a huge value to a lot of these content partners who are building their brand as we build ours. And so core to our business is the partnership of helping them with their brands as they help us with ours. So that's a big piece of it. We are co-marketing with them, and we are providing that shelf space and that front door to introducing some of these content providers that may not have the marketing or the distribution that they would love to have. And what we've seen in these models, especially like Hulu with Disney, is that, but the opportunity of the aggregation really lifted all boats, right? So all of the content that sat within Hulu really lifted all boats of eyeballs and consumption and really helped drive the business. And it is a proven model that aggregation works. And that is another thing that we are bringing to the table. A lot of these players couldn't go out to some of the distribution partners and do individual deals. What we are saying to them is your brand is front and center. We are going to do those distribution partnerships that you will participate in. And your content will sit alongside other content, which will allow for all boats to rise in that aggregated model. In terms of how it works, we are doing revenue shares on both the credit-based model as well as the managed service model.
And then you also mentioned being very analytics-based. And so is there some information sharing that goes on with your partners so that they're getting a different perspective and view of what's resonating with consumers who enter their content through this different portal and through a different process?
So we share information that will help them better monetize their assets. So we will work closely with them to help them identify the value that they can extract out of a specific piece of content. So it'll be informed when they are loading their assets, loading their shows and movies onto our platform, that they can set the credit value of each one of their assets. What we provide is an informed position on how they may be able to extract the most value from that movie or that show or that series or that bundle.
I did a little bit of reading before our conversation today, and one of the things I noticed is that you're doing some promotion to put certain content or categories of content in front of your customers. I think you've got a 30 documentaries and 30 mm-hmm. days promotion or position going on right now. Is that another way that you're going to work with your partners to try to elevate some of this incredible content that may not be easily found otherwise?
I think everyone will agree that content is the driver, right? It is the primary driver to drive a potential customer into the platform. We absolutely are working with our partners on building these campaigns. We also did a launch of the BBC and really focused on the content, the amazing content that is on the BBC right now. And a lot of our campaigns are centered around the content because it has to be. That is all customers want to see is the content. They don't care what features I have, although I do feel strongly that tech features or the evolution of technology and experiences will play a huge role in this market. You see that Netflix is spending $14 billion on content development and Disney's spending billions and billions, everybody's spending billions of dollars. And where we sit with that is currently we're not bankrolling programming. We are innovating on a technology experience and a way for a consumer to access a lot of different types of content.
So the curation of content becomes so important and the recommendations become so important. Mm-hmm. How do Stroom's content service recommendations work?
Right now, we have a lot of manual curation. We are driving to genres of content. We have people that are manually curating the experience. And then there will be personalization that will come into play quite soon of, you know, Vicky, if we see that you really like cooking and you like BBC, and we will start providing recommendations based on that and offering you bundles of content around what you find interesting. And we have this opportunity because we have over 60 services on the platform, and we will grow and add more services on the platform, that we'll be able to curate genres of content along with brands of content that we'll be able to serve to you. So it's a bit of a twist on how SVOD services are curating and personalizing experiences today.
What lessons or experiences from working with big brands like Discovery and Disney are you bringing to Stroom?
What Disney provided to me was the art of storytelling and franchise development, which I think a lot of other service providers are trying to figure out right now. Like if you look at what Netflix is doing, getting into the gaming space and how do you franchise these brands and content. What I bring to it is that understanding, that sort of cross-section of technology and storytelling, and also sort of the deep level of research and the brand awareness. You can't just go into launching a business without really truly understanding what your KPIs are and how you're going to drive brand awareness and what is going to be important to a customer, which is really the content. So I would say that all four of us bring this deep level of expertise to smartly build this platform. We are seasoned executives who come from varying backgrounds. Even when I was at Disney, I would say I always felt like I was in a scrappy startup because at the time, the digital business wasn't as big as it is today. And I always felt like I was fighting for my business at Disney as a scrappy startup. kind of mindset. And so I think for us, that's what we're bringing to it. It's just this passion in this space and technology, in the space of understanding storytelling, understanding your customer, and building on that.
So you touched on a couple of things there that lead me to ask a question I really hadn't anticipated asking, but talk to us a little bit about the personal journey aspect of this. What is it like for the four of you to leap from where you were and what you were doing into this scrappy startup to try to fill a need that you saw so clearly?
From my personal journey, to be able to work with a brand like Disney or to be able to work with a brand like Discovery was an incredible opportunity. To leave companies like that, it's no doubt it is terrifying, but I really didn't think twice about it when I jumped in because it felt so crystal clear to me what we were trying to do and how we wanted to shift the market. You know, and I think that the SVOD space is in its infancy in a lot of ways, and the opportunity to shift and be a disruptor was something that I couldn't walk away from. The ability to take incredible brands and potentially disrupt the model of how everybody sees this business was something that was so core to something that I wanted to do that I had to do it.
Disruption in a really good way that builds value for everyone involved.
That's right. And then, I mean, you're far more succinct in saying it than I am. But something else that was really important to me is, you know, the value of opening up the doors of all of these different services to customers that don't know that it exists. It sort of goes back to something we were talking about of sort of the democratization of the content. It's really about how does somebody access Sundance? How does somebody access the Toronto Film Festival? How do they get an eye into that content? And that value to me is so important to allow people to have a seat at that table, to be able to watch that content as it's coming out versus waiting till a year later. So I love that idea of being able to bring that to a customer.
Well, Lauren, typically I try to ask a question that will have us wrap on a high point, but your passion comes through so loud and clear that I think we're there. I think that is the high note, that the future is really bright and you've got this tremendous vision and incredible passion around bringing it to fruition. Is there any final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I do. You know, I do have an incredible passion around this space. I would leave people with, there is so much incredible content out there that is untapped by eyeballs. There are the big players in the marketplace and they do a tremendous job and they are building great businesses and have incredible content and services. But I would not count out the other players in the market who sit in that tier one, tier two, and tier three, that medium to long tail of content providers. There's just a tremendous amount of content out there that deserves to be front and center. And that is what Stroom is providing to not only the content provider, but also the potential customer, that they can have access and see front and center incredible content and brands that exist outside of some of the larger players.
Lauren, it has been such a pleasure speaking with you. I love peeling back layers on new businesses, new business models, passionate founders who have a vision to meet a need in the marketplace. I know I've learned a lot today. I'm sure our listeners have as well. And just, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Vicky, thank you so much for having me on your show. I love talking about Stroom. So thank you for giving me that platform to tell you more about it.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.